Right. So here we are. Take two. Long boy showed up. Say hey, Long.
Hello. And I'm still here, although Madel is still in Fresno.
Yeah, we don't have Madel, so we do have Long, though, as our guest.
Who will be doing his best to be a Palawan woman with two children.
Who's hot.
So.
We did miss Madel's hotness. We just went on and on last time instead of being all distracted by your hotness.
It's all my hot flashes.
No.
Wow.
Well,
Oh, Madel.
so because you guys are both from the same cohort, I'll be the news person here.
Okay.
So your cohort has, no, I'm just kidding. But I guess their cohort is a very big deal because in our department they have 4 out of 5 successfully
Demonstrated.
or huh? defended their master's theses on time, and then Angie is, she is right behind. She's not too far behind.
Not too far.
But then the caveat is, of course, that Angie, doesn't get kind of the intellectual support and bonuses that most students in the department and on the campus get. So we always have to remember that. I mean, one of the reasons that we started this podcast is because kind of there aren't faculty here, with the exception of maybe Ross, who we can actually talk to about these things and get an kind of engaged conversation, and not a conversation that's simply like, "Oh, I've never heard of that," or, "Oh, that sounds nice, fellow brown person." So they, I mean, their cohort has been going through like a lot of kind of intellectual changes and revolutions and stuff over the past couple of months, as they've all been furiously writing, defending, hearing about each other's work and stuff. So.
And there's been a lot of attention. The Tomoko, Mon, Kathy, all of their theses were or theses.
I believe it's thesis says I.
Thesis says I are were very, very, very well received and lauded, and it was really exciting, to be these people that we've been in conversation with were getting so much positive attention. But I'm not going to say that like I didn't have any petty, jealous, wine-soaked moments, because in fact I did.
Me too.
Because
of all the groundbreaking work that's being
this
done
is
in this
actually
department.
being
People will remember. Okay, just to remind Long that people
do
will
listen
listen to
to
this.
this.
Do they?
Some people in the
Rostos.
department listen to this. So
Well, I just said
Oh,
yes. Oh,
I
yeah, and we know that that would never be a sarcastic remark.
Of course not.
Anyway, it's been really intense though, because we did this thing earlier this year where we said, "Oh, we'll go to each other's defenses." Now I thought we were just saying that to be polite, but actually, we were
We did.
Long held us to our word,
Wish I could
and
rest. That's really
now
good. No, but that's really good though that you guys did do that.
I think it was good. It was kind of hard to be a witness for each other though. Like by the end, I was worn out. The anxiety I felt on behalf of the other students, and then also the, I guess the less pleasant, the more, the darker side, the jealousy, the, it was, yeah, it's, I know that people, like earlier today, I was talking to somebody in your cohort, and she's like, "You guys are sickeningly sweet cohort." And you know what? You could say that, but I think that, people who really know us know it's a little more complicated. Like anytime you're close to people and you love people, and that is absolutely true that we do, we love each other in spite of, other, in some ways, like we have family aspects where we fight and we make up, and but no, it's not all cherries and whipped cream and nuts.
Being sweet has its risks, like
Yeah.
type 2 diabetes.
Like on the like Long and I are closer, like we've been calling each other and visiting and stuff, and I think that, it's definitely because we're like on the outside of the rave reviews right now. So
Well, I mean, it's important to, you know, to say this stuff because the department, you know, it has to admit to its limitations or its biases, whether they be intentional or unintentional. I mean, it's concentrations, you know, it's subconscious focuses and stuff, or foci, whatever, stupid English language. because, I mean, but that's what's, I mean, because, you know, we had critiques last year about indigeneity, and things start to slowly change. Mm-hmm. And so the department is, it's difficult. It's a difficult project because it's not simply Asian American studies or Chicano studies or Latino-Latina studies. I mean, it's ethnic studies. And so basically you come in, and if your project matches what the professors know or what they're interested in doing, you'll get a hell of a lot of support. You know, you'll be lauded as, you know, this is really good work.
Groundbreaking.
This is groundbreaking work. I'm doing similar work. I mean, and it's a sharing process. I mean, that's the way the best scholars are made, is when you do have an active sharing process with people that are working on similar things or can speak productively to your projects. If you're not in that, and if you're on the outside, then the department still has to find a way of supporting you, but it can become difficult.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it's important that nonetheless that it get mentioned. I mean, and that we don't just assume that everything's great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. I mean, I can't complain because I feel like I have the full support of Ross, and that he's like enthusiastically, you know, like in my corner and giving me what I need to be successful, and has been. But it's true, you know, I wasn't able to take all of the classes and have that sort of focus around my work that the girls were. But I have to say, you know, I'm proud of them, you know, because we have been through this process together, and I remember how scared we all were.
Mm-hmm.
And how just hearing about these ideas to seeing them defend their ideas, the changes that have gone, you know, on as scholars and stuff, and what I'm hoping for myself. So, yeah, I don't know. What does this have to do with indigeneity? I mean, I obviously, like, there's a problem,
mm-hmm.
But it's not going to be met, you know?
It's slowly changing, though. We're finding our indigenous epistemologies class.
Yeah, it could. It could. I mean, and then this department has shifted a little. I mean, remember, so if the indigenous studies cluster hire happens, that, you know, over the next couple of years, when you're gone, you know.
Well, I have to tell you a story.
Oh, no. Oh, no,
bad? I got on the shuttle to come here. I was going to give blood the other day. Remember when you saw me?
Yeah.
And I got on the shuttle and I sat down, and this woman started talking to me, the bus driver, you know. She says, "I remember you from when so-and-so was giving a job talk." And I said, "I remember that you were there too when we had a Native American
Amy
applicant."
Lone Tree?
Yeah.
Oh, uh-huh.
And she said, I said, "Yeah, you're Native, you're from so-and-so." She's like, "Yeah." She's like, "Are you the girl from Oregon?" She's like, this woman who drives the shuttle knew that I was like the one lone Native grad student here at UCSD, right? "Are you the girl from Oregon?" So it could get met. Like, I was just telling Maguette when I came in today, I was a little grumpy because Long was talking about this woman in Lit who wants to get together with the members of the cohort for a writing workshop, you know? And I was like, I was a little snotty, and I was like, yeah, the Asians need more support for each other. They're just lost, you know?
Asians are minority at UCSD. You're underrepresented, I swear.
You know, and I'm not above, like, even though I say kumbaya and I want this, like, level of multiculturalism, I'm not above some petty, like, geez Louise, cry me a river already.
There's so much yellow, we have jaundice.
But,
lots of love.
But, so, there's that, but then, I mean, but think about the impact you've had on your cohort.
Yeah,
I mean,
definitely.
Like, for me.
Yeah. Like,
I'm now thinking of myself as an indigenous scholar.
Well, so long, you should, You should introduce yourself okay, and talk changing. About...
A scholar of about... indigeneity, not a ninja scholar, just to make sure. As an adverb, not an adjective.
So yeah, introduce yourself and talk about your...
Yeah.
Your... If you want, you can talk about your defense and your thesis. Or what your work you're planning on doing.
Well, I'm planning to do...
But he could bring a necessary queer element to our, you know... I mean... If you talked about your thesis.
Yes.
Well, I guess that's kind of wrong because I was equating AIDS with queer. But anyway.
Yes.
Bad mama. Bad mama. Go
and
ahead.
And she's supposed to be the queer constituency in, the indigenous collective. But anyway, I'm thinking about doing indigeneity in terms of Asian American studies, but through film, which is rarely ever mentioned in terms... Cultural production is very not... talked about indigenous studies because we tend to talk about some, which is good too. So this is one aspect that I like to explore. So mass media, cultural production, film, and film as ethnographic and anthropological gaze.
I think that's interesting. When we were taking this ethnic studies class at University of Oregon, we were looking at indigenous film, and you know, there was just very little written on. On that, so and what we found wasn't very good.
Mm-hmm.
So, so go on with that.
Indigenous semiotics.
So why are you interested in it, though?
Well, it meshes what I like, but also I have to thank Angie for pushing me towards a place that I've never even heard about until I came here. Disability studies, fat studies. All types of studies, alien studies, it's all types of, but indigenous studies, well, that's new to me. So it got my thought-provoking engine going. And so the conversation is slowly shifting. Maybe not all people are jumping on the indigenous bandwagon because it's not their politics, but at least it's influencing people one by one. So the Asian Americans, the yellow people, underrepresented at UCSD, some of them are starting to see themselves in terms of indigeneity and how their relation to natives and indigenous peoples are.
That could be really good. I mean, does Ma in you guys' cohort, does she think about that at all
indigenous people? Interesting. No, this is so interesting because it came up in her defense.
Yeah.
I've asked Ma, you know, do you identify Hmong as indigenous, and she said no. Cool. They're like nationless. But she says no, they're, you know, pushed out from China, whatever. She doesn't though. And so there are a lot of comparisons. Like I'll send her an article if I read it, cuz especially when that hunter Vang in Wisconsin and that happened and there was the shootings. An article I read was just so, like, cowboys and Indians in the language. And we've talked about, like, comparisons. Like, there was also Grey's Anatomy where a Hmong girl was treated. And you could have, like, cut out Hmong and put in Navajo. And it would have been, you know, they had to wait for the shaman. They had to, you know, that was a... So these tropes get shared a lot. And we've talked about maybe writing an article or something, but I don't know if we have anything other to say than these tropes get shared a lot because she... says, yes, we don't have a written language, but we're not indigenous. So at her defense, though, Ross asked, he wasn't asking her to claim indigeneity, but he was asking her to engage with it and reckon with it. And there was, she was resistant because, I think, of her desire not to claim indigeneity, but I think that she knows that she needs to...
reckon.
Yeah, she needs to find a way to talk about it, even if it's like... because a lot of the things that she wrote were... You could use the framework to talk about Native American refugee soldiers or, you know... which was Ross was excited about.
No, because... I mean, there's positive and there's negative articulations of indigeneity. So there's those who say that we are indigenous, but then, and that it's like a positive assertion. But then there's also kind of ways of defining it that are more based on issues of statelessness, you know, and those sorts of things. So, yeah, because the more I heard about her project, I was always like, you know, why are you, why is this Asian American studies? You know, it doesn't really match.
What do you think?
I think Asian? It's the enemy politics of it. I mean, the biggest majority group on this campus is Asian Americans. The smallest group is Native Americans.
No, Pacific Islanders. Woo!
Oh yeah, Pacific Islanders. Pacific Islanders.
Two, and then two grads, maybe three undergrads.
So Asian Americans has the institutional support. It's easier to identify with.
So you think that she feels like there'd be a loss if she were to take herself out of that category?
It's a traumatic thing to go to a small group.
I don't mean to analyze Ma.
Like, it's traumatic to go to be consider yourself part of a group that's underrepresented, disadvantaged, invisible. Mm-hmm.
But you know? So much of what her
people are invisible.
Well, and there's a uniqueness to her work that does not get addressed in Asian American studies. But I can see where she has alliances and get strength from from mm-hmm. being an expert there or taking those classes. But there was just this this one thing she was talking about. This article she sent out on the Ethnic Studies listserv was about this general who's resisting the
Laotian government.
Yeah, the Laotian government. He's 77 years old and he was arrested. And the tone of the article was just sinister. You know, it was sort of like this. It's really upsetting that this elder in their community has been arrested. For terrorist activity, and this is what she's talking about. I mean, and that's not going to happen to other groups that are in that Asian American category. So, I don't know.
No, because I know there is a lot of that. I get your point though that there is kind
Hmong
of
is Hmong studies though. There so is what kind of she a pressure. Decides.
I think for her, important. What's pushing her is critical Hmong studies, not necessarily Asian American studies.
Well, I think that's true. I mean, like,
especially critical Hmong studies.
I think that wherever Ma ends up, will be where people do Hmong studies. I mean, I think that she's going to be that important to Hmong studies.
And Asian American studies is the easiest launching pad.
Yeah.
And that is where you always tell me cutting. Anyway, all the Asians always tell me that's where the cutting edge work is done.
Not Asian American studies. The Asians is outside. Natalia Molina said that about the cutting edge work on immigrants.
I thought you said that.
I did not say that.
I think you understood.
Professor Molina said
that
in her class that the cutting edge work in immigration stuff is coming from Asian American studies.
No, I find this interesting because at the Indigenous Studies Conference, one of the people that came to our panel was Okinawan, studying in Hawaii, at the University of Hawaii. And so it was really surprising because usually when people from Okinawa come to the United States, and if they're students and scholars, it's just like they're Asian American, you know? Or it's assumed that they are because Okinawa was part of Japan. But then I found it interesting that she was coming to an Indigenous Studies conference, and she wasn't necessarily saying that we are Indigenous people like we are we're like the Chamorros from Guam, we're like Native Americans and stuff, but it was more like that if I look at my relationship between I look at my relationship between different states or my transnational relationship, my identity, my experiences, you know, it's not really Asian American, you know, there's definitely much more in terms of like if you look at the relationship between Okinawans and the Japanese government and the Native Americans and the federal government, I mean, it's more similar than in terms of a Japanese person on the mainland and the Japanese government. Because Okinawa was a colony of the United States until 1972, and then it became a colony of the Japanese government after 1972. And so
Mr. Miyagi's indigenous?
Huh? Well, I don't know. I mean, well, that's one of the things. There's a lot of different ways, remember? Yeah. That's one of the things at the conference was that...
That's right.
So many different ways
multiple
of thinking about
indigenality.
Because... And then the people that came from elsewhere kind of challenged a lot of Native American assumptions about indigeneity.
Mm-hmm.
Because most of the people there just kind of tended to see indigeneity through their position. But then you had the guy from India who, where in India, indigeneity is basically defined by poverty, defined by poverty, and then it gets mixed in, or poverty and then lack of representation in government, and then it gets mixed in with the lowest castes. Mm-hmm. So you actually, you know, so you have 40 million indigenous people in India, like 35 million of which are the former untouchables. So they're not the people that are tied to the land. There are those people that still exist, but then in India, like, it's also these other people that count as indigenous there. And then in different places in Southeast Asia, you have the indigenous people, such as in Malaysia, the indigenous people that, you know, that run the government. Even if they're small, even if they're not the most economically privileged class, they are still powerful in the government, and they have different affirmative action programs to make sure that their position is maintained, so that there's a certain amount of people that are in schools, certain amount of people employed in businesses, and so on. And so, yeah, there's just all different ways, and so, I don't know, I wish that more people that kind of don't fit in with the categories of Asian Americans or anything, you know, that they wouldn't necessarily just jump in that direction because it's...
That makes sense.
It's easier, or
it's
because
established.
It's...
Well, as,
yeah.
I think that... I mean, I'm excited about the future of Indigenous studies, and I think that as it becomes, like, a site where more and more people work, then more and more people will. Mm-hmm. But I'm not surprised, you know, that... I mean, it's not necessarily, like, you know, that... I don't know what I want to say. I want to be political. So, you know, because, but anyway, I think that, you know, as people see it as an advantage, they will take that advantage. Mm-hmm. And until that happens, though, you know, that it's not going to attract every scholar.
Yeah. I mean, well, there is, in the U.S., there is no indigenous studies departments or programs,
right,
anyways. So a lot of it is
Native American.
A lot of it is kind of Native Americans expanding their scope to include that. So, yeah.
Yeah, I guess that's...
But I'm glad that Ross asked that question, though. Because from listening to Ma, that's what I was always wondering.
And it's funny, she asked him to be on her committee. So there's obviously some type of engagement that's subconscious, if not...
Well, and I think that Ross, too, is... has other talents beyond his focus of study. I mean, he's
yes,
really good at
Ross
framing projects. He's really
Ross
good at...
Yes,
he's a great editor.
That.
All right, all right.
We know that.
But I'm just saying, you know, you don't have to be an Indian lover to want to work with Ross.
But you asked him. If you ask him, if he, self-conscious engagement, if you know it whether or not, you don't have to reckon with it. Ross is the ghost haunting you.
You know, so we're all looking forward to next year, because
week 10,
there'll be an Indigenous epistemologies class in the fall.
That's gonna be fascinating.
We could even take
the lecture.
We could even take the seminars.
I don't think the girls are taking it.
I'm taking it.
Roshni is taking it.
Oh, good.
Yeah, I'm taking it.
Yeah, so
it won't be me and
Ross
be sitting there.
No, I don't think Ross
and
would do that. Ross would,
oh.
Ross would draft people.
My favorite people.
He's the chair.
Class.
He can, like, he's got
one. Well, and actually,
thing.
We have another student coming next year.
Oh, yeah, we have a Native Hawaiian student coming in next year.
No, and that Yaki.
The guy from...
From Arizona?
From Arizona?
Yeah.
Oh, when you said Arizona, your accent shifted.
Yeah, I know. I'm sorry.
Arizona.
Oh, God.
From Arizona.
Oh, man. And then she was cooking the fry bread. And she just kept cooking fry bread. Oh, man.
No, so, yeah, it's definitely exciting.
Fighting.
Maybe there'll be some sort of critical mass or something next year.
All right. Let's hope for that.
Okay.
But
critical mass of Asians.
Yeah, let's wrap it up. So Long, what song are you gonna sing?
Yeah, what song are you gonna sing?
Because you're
as
the
our
guest.
Sing.
Yeah.
We sing every single time.
Oh my gosh.
If I know it, I'll join you.
What about Bootylicious?
Bootylicious.
What about Mariah Carey? What about I'll Be There?
I'll Be There.
Okay.
How does it start? I can't remember.
What are we gonna sing it?
You're going to start.
But that's our cohort song.
That's okay.
Ugh.
You're here for
205. 205.
Okay, we're saying that.
Okay.
You and I must make a pact. We must bring salvation back. Where there is love, I'll be there.
I'll be there.
I'll reach out my hand to you. I have faith in all you do. Where there is love, I'll be there.
I'll be there.
I'll be there to protect you. That's the answer.
Thank you.
Yay, thank you for suffering through
another. Good job. I thought that sounded beautiful. Goodbye from Angie.
Goodbye from Long.
Goodbye from Magit.